I mean, you're the soccer man.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all soccer people.
This is Roots Pod.
That is empty at the other side. He threw another ball on the field. Rafael Spiegel just threw another ball on the field. What? He went to grab a ball off the podium. Play is continuing. Shot toward the empty net. Rolling toward the line. And it's saved.
Oakland Roots 0, Orange County Soccer Club 1, in a game that will be known for something other than the final score, I think, for the rest of time. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about the lessons we've learned from the first little bit of the Oakland Roots season and maybe some other things happening in the soccer world because it's an interesting time for international football. This is Aaron. We have the regulars here this week, John and Peter. We're also joined by Jack and two notes there. Jack, regular contributor to the blog. You might remember Jack from his interview with a representative from the Players Association once upon a time. So perhaps we can check back in with Jack about what he thinks the status of those negotiations are, the CBA negotiations are. But a couple of points of introduction here for Jack. One, we spent a lot of time last episode talking about the troubled relationship John has with the soccer gods and how he had abused that relationship in a way that was perhaps bad for the Oakland Roots. I just want to throw out there that I talked to Jack about coming onto the pod with us a couple of weeks ago, and he was unable to when we recorded last week because he coaches volleyball at the high school level now and happened to be busy that night. But he did say to me, once we agreed that he'd come on this week, that he was, quote, glad for his first positive Roots Pod appearance. And I said, don't jinx it. But I was apparently too late, not quick enough on the draw with that one, because since then, of course, draw and loss. A lot of the good vibes out the window. And
you see, it's not just me. It's not
I know.
Me,
I know. I sort of worry what sort of power this group has, honestly. And second, the suggestion was made after our last episode that perhaps we could all swap mics at the end of every week, given our various the audio difficulty. I don't know what John is doing right now, but the audio difficulty. So Jack has decided to really join in yet really in the spirit of that by joining us from his car.
The one bedroom apartment is full tonight.
With that said, Jack, welcome back to the pod.
It's good to be back.
Maybe not as excited about the season as you were 2 weeks ago when we talked about the Roots, but I think you got to admit the Roots are still playing some pretty exciting football right now.
I'm barely less excited, honestly.
Okay. Sure. All right. Good.
It's still the best start to a season the Roots have ever had by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. So let's the downer 0-1, first loss on the season. Mateo Bunbury in the 47th minute just caught the Roots back line out and put Rafael Spiegel in a very difficult situation, and he chose poorly. You know, it was a free runner in on goal. He could have come out, he could have gone back. He did neither and or both, depending on how you look at it. And that turned out to be all she wrote, but honestly, no one cares about that because second half stoppage time, as I'm sure many of you know, Spiegel goes up to the opposing goal on a Roots free kick, and Orange County is able to get possession of this free kick immediately after it happens. Spiegel is, of course, nowhere near his goal and elects to run off the pitch, grab one of the other balls, boot it down the field. And I just...
John, did you ask Ryan about... Did you get to ask Ryan about this postgame? I'm sorry, I missed you if you interviewed him.
We did. We asked about it.
What was he... What did he say?
I mean, it was genius.
Well, I mean, he didn't elaborate too much. We asked if he got an explanation for the red card because the AI bots that run the stat tracking on the league site and FotMob and so on and so forth had it down as a red card by way of violent conduct. So that clearly wasn't the case. It was more of I don't know what the terms are. He was clearly interfering the game.
It has to be dog so, right? Like, because it's most obviously unsporting behavior, but that's only a yellow.
Yeah, you know,
I think it has to be interference with an obvious goal scoring opportunity.
Or is it exactly just bringing a foreign object onto the field the same way
foreign object
with a chair to the field, you would be thrown out.
Well, look, you know what's funny? I could not believe the number of people, not even Roots fans, like going to bat for Spiegel on social media, and like I felt like it was self-evidently a red card.
Obviously.
I looked at the rules. I'm not sure it
is. I don't know. I think that's why I mentioned dog so, because I don't think there is, like, I think the ref was freelancing a little bit there.
Because serious foul play is redundant. It is also violent conduct. It's kind of, I assumed it must be something different because there is both serious foul play and violent conduct. But if, in fact, serious foul play is like defined as a dangerous tackle. And so I, in a sense, I read the rules as that not being a red card.
I can sense that there's two lawyers on this podcast.
Well, that's what makes me feel like I'm crazy, is because like he's cheating. It's like taking a PED, you know? Like, what if you had pushed a ball boy onto the field? Or like gone up to the referee and like put his hands over his eyes or something else. Like, I mean, it's like crazy making. But it's not violent, and apparently that means you can't give a straight red unless you can. I guess the logic for dog so is like, if you don't actually have a keeper, then one-on-one is a clear goal-scoring opportunity. Although it didn't stop play and McCabe got back and saved the ball.
Yeah. I'm telling you, the ref was freelancing. That's whatever. I think spiritually a red card is not like the wrong outcome here, because
no, I think it was the right outcome. I think it was the right call. It was,
it was so funny.
It was
objectively getting some stick from fans, but I was like, that's, I mean, what else are you gonna do in that situation?
It was objectively the funniest thing I've ever seen. One of the funniest things I've seen in a professional soccer match. I mean, to our knowledge, Raphael Spiegel is the first goalkeeper to get a straight red card for booting the ball back onto the field. You know, this is a common thing where the play stops and then someone throws the ball back onto the field. I was covering a game at when Roots played at Hayward, and I think it was following a corner kick. I forget which team it was, but the opposing goalkeeper, there's a stoppage in play. The opposing goalkeeper turns around and goes to the little kids, the little ball kids who are standing behind the goal, so innocent. And he goes, ball, 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 throw me a ball, throw me a ball. And the kid, rightfully so, throws the ball in confusion. The goalkeeper turns around like, you know, nothing happened and just lets the ball go onto the field and it stops play. Like, what Spiegel did was funny. What that guy did, he's just a dirtbag for trying to fool a fucking five-year-old. And, I mean, I've said it once. I said it in the on the blog, you know, there is never a dull moment covering Oakland Roots. At least he made it funny. So, I mean, such a unique moment. You know, we talked to Martin about it. He didn't really have much to say. We asked if he got an explanation.
Honestly, as a coach, yeah, what are you going to say at the end of the game?
It's just like, oh, fuck, man, it happened. Yeah, but I think it was very rightfully so a red card. I think a yellow would have been like, oh, if the play stopped, he was trying to delay the game. The play was live. It was going on. There was a goal scoring opportunity. Man, if only he booted it more centrally and like hit the ball, hit the guy, you know, put the ball right in between the play. That would have been like, it was already funny. That would have made it even better. But you know, bravo Spiegel, you went viral. Oakland Roots went viral. You got on USA Today.
This is just the second time the Roots have gone viral for their play on the pitch, right? I'm thinking the other time is that goal that Akeem Ward scored where he dinked it over the guy and that 4-3 win at the very end of the first USL season was a SportsCenter top 10 goal.
Yeah. Right. Oh, correct.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And
this one's even better. This one's even is more viral.
Kind of viral, but like
this is the most famous Root Soccer moment of all time.
Like in terms of things that have broken contain here, like
Ted Cruz tweeting a GIF of Akeem Ward putting Akeem Ward in rare company with a porn star I can't identify.
Right.
Let the record show that I did not identify on this podcast.
Well, I mean, yeah, right. So the off the field stuff, I think there's all kinds of Roots related things have broken contain. But like in terms of what's happened, you know, in the 90, pretty much those two things. This is, I mean, banner moment in Roots fan history. And honestly, you know, if Martin were upset, I don't think I could blame him, because if not for that, I mean, the best thing about this game from the Roots perspective would have been that incredible blazer he was wearing. I mean, I think his outfit for this game was top notch. Someone should probably tell him that what I assume is the strike through on his cancer hat doesn't really show up on TV. So it looks like he's walking around with a pro cancer hat.
The man loves it. You don't yuck his yum, man.
But I thought his outfit for the game was just top notch. And that's really, what else is there to talk about from that match? I feel like that's pretty much it right there.
Do you think it was premeditated? Like, does he, like, before the game, like, is this like a plan in your head that, like, if I'm caught out trying to score a goal, I'm just going to send another play?
I think it has to be. It honestly, that was my first thought. I was like, he's done this before.
That was me too. Like this is not the first time.
He was so quick on the draw to boot that ball down the field. It was like, he definitely has done this, or he's seen it. He's been in a match where it happened.
Some level, like, come across it. Yeah. God, we got to get to the bottom of this.
He must have assumed that the main ball had gone out of play though. That, cause like the ball got, cause it's like utterly crazy to do if the ball never leaves play. I think you guys are.
I don't know, man. I think he knew. I think he knew the ball was in play, man.
He was immediately off the field to grab the ball. He does not run towards the Roots goal. He immediately runs.
Yeah, he did. Oh man, I was so to take you through my moment. You know, I'm on the sidelines. I have my camera. I'm shooting. And I'm zoomed in with my camera, and then I just see this ball flying through the air on the top left of my viewfinder, and I'm like, oh, what just happened? And so it comes up to me and said, did you see what Spiegel did? And I'm like, no, it's like he booted the ball back onto the field. I'm like, oh, shit. Oh, man. At least, you know, it was a loss, but at least we had that.
Yeah, at least we had that.
I was on BART. We my son had decided he was tired of being in a soccer game. And so I was watching that on my phone on BART.
Like, probably without the benefit of the commentary, right?
Oh, yes.
Right? So you just see a second ball bounce onto the screen.
Yeah. And I assume like it's glitching or something, right? I you guys are assuming that he was going to try to stop play. I think that he sees the ball, he sees what's happening, he's like, I have to do something even crazier than the goal I conceded earlier to try to change the narrative of this game.
Oh boy. I mean, do we really think he did not cover himself in glory on that goal? We really putting that on him? Do you recall, long ball over the top. Bunbury gets behind the back line.
We know Hackshaw's slow. We know he's like, you can't be out. You can't be caught that far out.
As I wrote in the blog, I think that goal kind of reflects on a lot, not just Spiegel. It was 15 seconds into a formation change. You know, Tyler Gibson switches spots. Neville Hackshaw switching spots. They both get caught out.
And personnel change, not a formation change. They were still back five at that point.
Well, no. Martin said they were going to the 4-4-2. They were switching Tyler Gibson out to the left fullback spot because Julian Bravo had exited at halftime. So those two were, clearly out of position, a bit jumbled up. Spiegel out of position as well. It was just a calamity of errors in that situation. Martin took accountability for it. Saying, he took accountability and something he could look back onto as a coach. He also said that he thinks that Spiegel should have stayed on his line. We had defenders tracking back. At least put yourself in a position to make the stop if a shot is pulled. Yeah, just a whole mess of mistakes there from a shoddy formation change, players out of position, all of that.
I do think that's right. I mean, it is not all on Spiegel. The defenders get caught out of position, but there is like an extent to which it should be obvious that you should stay on your line there. Like, make this guy make the shot, you know? And that's what frustrates me is, like, by the time he got that, I feel like his angle wasn't great. And, maybe you can save it, but not if you let him dribble around you. So for sure, like, the defense got utterly burned.
Three guys making a mistake and him just making the worst of the three mistakes.
Yeah, it was. His three-cone shuttle speed really showed in that situation.
I mean, they got the long ball off too, right? I mean, I take your point. It was a moment of transition. Nothing worked in that moment. And I guess there's something comforting about that, right? I think there's a lot about this game that just isn't going to be repeated. You know, Peter Wilson is off on international duty. I think this is the only match for this break, right, that will have that issue. There's a chance, let me put it like this. There's a chance this is the nadir of the sort of the injury issues that the Roots are going to suffer, at least through the first part of the season. Right. Because
so you can't jinx the team now?
I said at least through the first. I'm trying to caveat this as much as I possibly can. So hopefully, right, the formation, the personnel that was available, right, this. And the other thing, I suppose, too, is that guys have gotten worked in, right? Davis Sinte is getting worked in. We saw our first quarter hour of Brian Jackison, and he looked like he can contribute to this team, right? So the depth is getting built up, knock on wood. And then you have this moment of transition. The Roots get caught. It's all she wrote. We're probably not going to see a keeper do what Spiegel did at the end of the game ever again, which, on some level is actually pretty unfortunate. But it's just a lot goes in to this particular result. And then at the end of the day, right, like Orange County is second in the West right now. Like it might not actually be a bad loss regardless. They might be okay, as much as we don't want to admit that. This might have been the wrong team to get when you have all of this going on. At the same time, there is one obvious theme I think that we can start to draw out of these matches, right? And Peter, you were all over this in the aftermath. The Roots just look better when they have a back four than when they have a back five, you know, and that this is yet, and this game was yet another example of that. Obviously the Roots didn't score in either half, but we know when they looked more threatening.
And an interesting thing about the Orange County game is that it isn't even the personnel that had been succeeding in the back four, because we still had Hackshaw on the field, maybe, after halftime.
He's responsible for the goal if the guys on the field are not Spiegel. Yeah, he's in there after halftime.
Yeah, but like, nonetheless, you like continued on for a little while, and we looked better in the back four, even without the
Edwards and Garcia as the center back pairing.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought that was really interesting. I mean, I put a graphic up on the Discord that shows the timestamp when we change formation in each game, and it is just across the board better with the four at the back rather than the five. And I'm sure Martin has seen that. I mean, maybe he's not intentionally doing something wrong. I'm sure he's trying to make it work, but it has not to date worked particularly well.
There's a real flexibility. I don't know. The flexibility about the team is kind of fun to watch. You got like Edwards can clearly do that. There's like a James Milner quality to Tyler Gibson this year, where we're just going to run his legs into the ground at left back or left wing or right wing or whatever he has to do this year. I don't know. The Edwards-Garcia partnership looks good, and it feels like their teams aren't going to score a lot of goals when they're running into that. They like cover a lot of ground. They pair with each other pretty well. They feel dynamic with the back four, and like they're pressing and winning stuff. And they don't with the back three.
Yeah, I think regardless of the personnel available, you stick with that formation. That is working.
I think I agree.
Yeah, I mean, losing Peter Wilson for a game definitely threw a corkscrew into things. Losing Mark Fisher for the foreseeable future definitely threw a corkscrew into things. It's the reason why you sign Maldonado to a 25-day deal. I think we can probably expect Maldonado longer than those 25 days. I think that Mark Fisher is going to take some time. I think, you know, I don't think we'll see him probably until, you know, the early months of the summer.
That sucks. He's been great. He's been most surprising, awesome new guy. That sucks.
He really has. He's really shown some quality. You know, we still haven't gotten a true update on Keegan Tingey. Martin said he's still going to take some time. So, you know, that's an interesting spot, you know, with the injury bug is already biting, and that makes, you know, things a concern going forward. So if you keep losing bodies at some of these other positions, you know, this, as Aaron said in the preseason, things can turn the opposite way very, very quickly. So you also have to monitor, you know, Trejo's minutes. You also have to monitor, as Martin said, Burton Jockeson's minutes early on. You know, you can't just run him out for, 60, 70, 80, 90 minutes so quickly. That being said, he did look great. Really came in on the left side and just was an instant game changer. So, the attack has long been the depth of the attack has been the most attractive part of this team, I would say, through, you know, from the preseason onward. Like, we were circling that as that's going to be a strong suit of this team. But yeah, the depth in the back is a bit concerning. Martin also mentioned that, you know, Julian Bravo pulled at halftime because he's dealing with something precautionary. You know, this week off, honestly, couldn't have come at a better time. It sounds like, per Martin's words, that Florian Vallot will probably be back this next game. I think we can probably expect him there. But, you know, that right back spot is definitely a concern right now. You know, Fisher is going to be out for, you know, maybe to June or July. We don't know when Keegan Tingey is going to be truly available. And when he does come back, as Martin has suggested with other players, they're going to probably limit his minutes. Maldonado is not a natural right back. He has always been a winger, but I think, you know, he's someone who can probably succeed at that position, especially if we're relying on that position to have really good service. He played in that preseason game that the fans were open to join, and he had an assist on one of the goals. It was a really, really well-placed cross all the way from the right side into, I think it was Jackson Keel. So, yeah, I think we can probably expect Maldonado to get some minutes. I think we could probably expect Tyler Gibson probably to continue getting minutes at that right back spot. But after that, oh boy, it's starting to look stressful.
I wonder if the availability of Florian Vallot means the availability of Florian Vallot and Martin's comfort with putting a midfielder and one without wheels in that spot means that we might be able to rotate Bobasi or Batash into that position. Both of those guys seem like they have similar skill sets to Gibson, and both of them can cover some ground. You know, they're not burners, mm-hmm. but they might be able to put in a shift there to give him some, give Martin some options. I mean, I don't want us to be, our midfield is good. I don't want us to be running our midfielders ragged, trying to patch a hole at right back. But, you know, sort of if Gibson can do that job, you wonder if those guys might be able to do it as well.
Yeah, I mean, Batash has gotten time on the right side in that right winger role. You can even look back with Wolfgang. He's gotten time in that right outside back role. But I think those are two guys where you don't want to deviate them from attack to defense very far. Bobosi, I think you don't want to move him from that central midfield spot. He's really proven to be, I mean, he's on trajectory to be one of the best central midfielders in the league right now. And Martin definitely has that belief in him. I don't think you want to deviate from that too heavily.
You know, sometimes the circumstances call for you to do things you don't want to do.
Yeah. You're very right.
You know, it's not a, this is not like a 60 match, you know, European season, but the point about running the midfield ragged, trying to patch a hole is, I mean, it's one to keep an eye on, because I think anyone who's watched a team, a club soccer team go through, a season where they just cannot seem to get out from under the injury bug can tell you it's never the first wave of injuries. It's always the wave of injuries that occurs because guys are trying to do things they wouldn't ordinarily have to do because somebody else is injured that ends up sinking your season. And I don't really think that's going to happen here because, like, you know, we're not playing in the Champions League here. You know, that's not where we are. But it is something to keep an eye on. At the same time, like, this was maybe the Roots' most lackluster performance, and they were probably still even with Orange County over the course of the match. You know, I mean, on the one hand, they've got 7 points out of 9 against the bottom three teams in the West, and they lost their only match against anyone else. Happens to be second place Orange County. On the other, like, there are a lot of points to be had given the way the Roots are playing. And given the nature of the USL, they just need this team to be reasonably healthy when the playoffs roll around. You know, like, it, we can have a rough summer as long as they get sixth place and go into the playoffs with a full complement of defenders. That's kind of all that matters.
Yeah, I agree. I want to talk positive, because I was going to talk positive 2 weeks ago when I ditched the show.
Please.
The midfield's the best midfield the Roots have ever had. By the Bobasi McCabe combination, there's never been anything like that before that we've had. It's, like, delightful to watch. I'm loving every second of it.
McCabe blatant is wall fall erasure.
A complete wall fall.
If we're going to stand for that.
Jose Hernandez, Matias Fasore. That's a tough one. I don't know.
There's a complement of Bobasi and McCabe that makes so much sense together. They just out, like, you can just see how much they fit together. And Bobasi, like, he's comfortable going forward. They also spent a ton of time with, like, the center backs were, like, pushing forward in the game against George County, where Bobasi is, like, the last line of defense, and he's really good at, like, tracking these balls out of the air, keeping things from getting in behind or anything. McCabe is, like, the most natural leader midfield guy the Roots have ever had, it feels like, in there, just in terms of his presence feels extraordinary. And then teams are horrified of Peter Wilson. They're just absolutely horrified. And when he's not there, they're not horrified of him, and all of a sudden it just feels like there's empty space on the field. These center backs that have been so busy all the time against the Roots are just, oh, well, now they're not scared at all. And without Velo, who's obviously the second choice to be that guy, if Peter Wilson's not going to be there, like, I don't know. In the preseason game, it felt like they spent a lot of time in, like, a 4-4-2, where Velo was just, like, slightly below Wilson, like, complimenting him there. I don't know. You're missing the central guys that feel like they should be the ones who are putting the ball in the back of the net. Right now. And so, of course, the Roots aren't scoring. And despite that, if, like, their goalkeeper doesn't stand on his head and spin in a circle in, like, a negative way, they are probably going to draw a game against a really good Orange County team. I don't know. I think that they're still in a really good spot. I think that they're... It feels so different. They feel like they have, like, a quality about them. They feel like they have a purpose about them. That even in, like... Even as they let the game against Phoenix slip, it was like, well, they're letting it slip, and it feels like we can learn from this. And as opposed to the past Roots teams where it's like, okay, here it comes again. It's just, this is what we do. We're into the forever slope down. I still believe. I still feel about as much confidence as I did when I said I was ready to have a positive experience. Most of what I feel bad about is, like, maybe the goalkeeper position is terrible. Which, God, that sucks. But I don't know.
It's obviously not an important position on the pitch.
It's fine. We'll just have more good. We just have better midfield. Just don't let the ball back there. Just keep the ball in the midfield and above.
Goalkeeper might be something that's easily replaceable.
Yes, like
it's important, but it has, I don't know, it's maybe the easiest thing to slot in someone new. I don't want to undersell the importance of the relationship between the center back partnership and the goalkeepers, but it's probably easier than a lot of anywhere else on the pitch.
It feels like the most fixable kind of problem, or just like one of those McIntosh get hot. I don't know. He has the shot stopper in him when he's really cooking. Just get hot and don't let anything in the goal.
Yeah, you know, I do believe that if McIntosh starts, that goal doesn't happen.
Yeah, no way that kind. He doesn't do that kind. He's too short of a goalkeeper to make those kinds of mistakes.
I think he either stays in the right position or he's able to time that pass better than what Spiegel did. You know, McIntosh was always really, really instinctive off of his line. And, you know, he had the lateral quickness to, I think, handle that dribble better than Raphael Spiegel, who's built like a power forward. Yeah, that goalkeeper spot is definitely what I'm going to be keeping an eye on as we get into April, May, June here when MLS teams are knowing who is not making the roster. Maybe Roots finally loan in a player. You know, I think that is a prime position to loan in a player. That's something Ryan Martin has done in the past. If it's something that he wants, I think this team will do it. They will deviate from that historic tendency.
I am ready to ride that agenda hard if it's necessary. All the time. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, having two veteran goalkeepers under contract makes me skeptical that they sign technically a fourth goalkeeper, knowing we have a 5-1-0 call up. I think it would be a prime position for the Roots first loan in since 2022.
Well, lots to look forward to, lots to be optimistic about. I suppose the other thing that we could briefly mention here about this match is that the form of the player quasi protest at the beginning of each half has morphed a little bit. It doesn't seem to be going anywhere. Like I mentioned, Jack last time he was on the podcast, we talked actually in quite a bit of depth about the CBA negotiations. I don't know if you have any other insights, Jack, or any thoughts at all.
No insights, but plenty of thoughts, I guess.
Well, that's a dangerous place to be. All right.
It's one of my favorite spots. It's the comfort zone.
That's actually why podcasts were formed, for people without insights, but a lot of thoughts.
It feels like the protests, they're changing because they aren't registering in the way that maybe they hope they are. I don't know if that's because people have been lulled by soccer protests. There was just the 2 years when they took a knee before every match at every level of soccer. There's been all of these things. Maybe people just aren't processing what this could kind of be. It just doesn't feel like it's breaking that threshold that it probably needs to start mattering, where you have people who are common fans aware of this that need to have, I don't know, and something that it needs to happen. Yeah. I don't know. I imagine that they're not in a position to strike because obviously there's not a strike fund the players wouldn't be able to afford. A lot of the players wouldn't be able to afford to go without a strike. But also, I don't think the USL survives a couple, much of a strike. It's not that good of a business. But businesses that aren't booming don't tend to thrive during labor stoppages. There's a reason there's not a lockout or a strike. I think both sides know that they can't afford to stop playing. This machine has to keep going if they want to have jobs and if they want these clubs to stay open. Which does lead me to kind of the depressing conclusion, I suppose, from where I'm sitting now, that USL obviously thinks this is something they can push away, not think about, and it will just go away in a little while and they won't have to give these guys healthcare, is sort of where I'm at. And I imagine, disappointingly, in a lot of situations where workers don't have as much leverage as they dream of, is my insight, I suppose.
These are your thoughts. I thought you promised us no insights.
Absolutely, yeah. No insights. I'll share if I have insights, I promise.
Yeah. I mean, the maybe the encouraging thing is, from what we have been able to glean, right, the fight about standard, many teams are treating their players right, right? It's not like we have a league-wide problem. I think most of what we've heard suggests that Oakland is not the issue, right? The roots are not the issue.
It actually seems like they use having decent facilities, all of the other things, like a major recruiting pitch.
Yeah.
I don't know
the situation. I don't know if we need to be too pessimistic. I think I agree with you that we're not, neither side is in a position to really hold the line in the most extreme manner, but
I wonder how much it's the audience for the protest. The audience for the protest is other fans, is getting non-sickos to understand that there's something going on. And I think that is probably increasing. And I wouldn't be surprised if the goal isn't get normie Oakland Roots fans very angry at the Oakland Roots because Roots fans, and I'm sure, Sacramento fans and New Mexico fans, I'm sure are similar groups of people, basically pro-labor fans who are going to get mad at the Oakland Roots. And in turn, the Oakland Roots owner is going to grab the owners of Miami and Loudoun by the collar and say, listen, motherfuckers, fold your team or agree to the CBA. We're getting killed, even though we're doing the right thing. And I think that is maybe the player's actual path is to success.
To expand on that, I actually think it's even easier, theoretically, if you were to pressure ownership groups that you could consider more sympathetic to labor. They don't even have to win over the worst owners like you do in a traditional sports league, because the USL negotiates as itself, because it's a single entity league or a privately held league. You just have to get these, again, theoretically more sympathetic to labor owners to be mad at the league itself.
Theoretically is definitely unstated in all of this discussion, don't worry.
You just have to get them to pressure the league itself. You don't even have to pressure the other owners. The owners don't negotiate. The league negotiates for itself.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, since it's not the league who's going to be paying, you know, for housing for these players, right?
But it's the league who negotiates. It's the league who is negotiating with the USL as opposed to, like, a collection of the owners.
But I'm sure that the league just bargains to whatever is the bottom owner's ability or willingness to go along with that.
I think it's even below that. I don't think they're considering the bottom owner. I think they're just bargaining to, like, they just are trying to create a situation where they can have as many franchises start as possible, whereas they can get as many expansion fees as possible. And so the lower the qualifications to start a team are, the more teams that expand. Make the teams who that business model isn't benefiting, like, mad about that business model is probably the way forward.
Man, that's... You're asking for a much bigger win in the CBA negotiation than I think is even theoretically possible.
The big win in the CBA would just be guaranteed healthcare, right? I feel like there's an improvement in salary would be cool, but, like, it feels like that's the whole, I would imagine that's the main holdup.
All right. Well, back to the actual association football. The Roots get to try to fix what ails them with the bye week and then with a trip to Tampa Bay. So that's just great. Tampa Bay, little blip last year, not up to their typical standards. They appear, based on the early returns, to be back. What a time. What a time to get the Tampa Bay Rowdies. I'm not sure this is when I would like to play them, but that's when we get them. They look good. They're a stable franchise in the USL. You recognize their, recognize their players. You know, Lewis Hilton, he's been on this team for a long time. Russell Cicerone was not on this team, but is now. Sebastian Cruz, Jamali Waite, who was on the bench actually for the Reggae Boys in their loss to the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And we mentioned there's a lot of other stuff going on in the world of soccer. How about the continent of Africa will be sending 10 teams to the 2026 World Cup, assuming that it happens. The continent of Europe will not be sending Italy, who apparently just is committed to not qualifying for World Cups when they're hosted by countries with apparent human rights issues. You know, that's their thing. Qatar, Russia, the United States, Italy was like, no, thank you.
You're saying it's strategic?
Yeah, it's strategic. Yeah.
Every 4 years, Denmark threatens to boycott the human rights abuses, and Italy has the stones to just do it.
Just do it, yeah.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah, it's sort of wild. They didn't even make it out of the groups in 2014. I mean, it was a stacked team, but I mean, it's been so long since the Italians were in the World Cup that their center mid, the last time they played a World Cup match, was Andrea Pirlo.
Jesus.
Who remains?
That is maybe
the best soccer player I've ever seen play live. Oh, just kidding. I saw Arsenal play once. No, Andrea Pirlo is still probably the best soccer player I've ever seen play live, although he was about 45 when...
Oh, sorry. I thought you were doing a bit there for a second. There's that semi-viral set of TikToks / reels of people pretending to be Arsenal fans being like, oh, who would you take, Pele and Arsenal's current 11? And you have the Arsenal fan who goes, oh, I don't know. I'm not sure Pele gets into our team.
I have not seen that bit. As you know, I have very little sense of humor about Arsenal Football Club.
That's true. That is true.
To return to the World Cup, I have been... A very funny option is the U.S. gets bounced in 3 games, but it occurs to me an actually funnier outcome of this World Cup is the U.S. wins it in the most shamelessly corrupt way we've ever seen. Just like opponents getting 3 and 4 red cards a game.
That's the sort of stuff you do for the inaugural FIFA Peace Prize winner, if he were to ask, I think. You know, that's the kind of leeway you get once you've won that award, is my understanding. Plus, if he's still around for it, our president's going to be up there accepting the trophy on behalf of whomever wins anyway, so it might as well be us.
Why not us?
God damn it. God damn it. Oh, and I guess the other World Cup thing to mention is that the final qualifier who will play in Levi's is now, that'll be Turkey, after they won over Kosovo to take that that last spot. So they'll play against, I think, Paraguay in Levi's.
Is Turkey a Kosovo recognizer?
Oof.
We That's do a lot of for foreign our policy other on podcast this,
today in the Balkans.
Yeah. Wow. Off the top of my head, don't know. All right, let's bring it back around. Bring it back around. The Oakland Roots, the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Bit of a stern test for the Oakland Roots, but got some time off to prep for it. We know that the Rowdies defense can be breached because they finally surrendered a goal this past weekend. So this is obviously not an insurmountable task. Jack, we'll start with you. How are the Oakland Roots going to beat the Tampa Bay Rowdies?
Is this at home or on the road?
I believe it's on the road.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
This is an away match against the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Oh,
then a super inspiring 1-0. Mm. And they're going to score on a Kendall McIntosh header at the last minute.
Hell yeah.
Wow. Wow.
What a prediction.
I think we could do without goalkeeper.
They're going to send him forward in like the 80. They're going to send him forward in the 88th minute. It's going to be even earlier.
Wow. I love it.
His only choice at that point is to score because.
Or he has to throw a ball onto the field.
Yeah.
Well, and you're predicting that for a 1-0 game, so they're sending him forward with a point on the road against.
It's truly insane.
We're really trying to get points now.
It could be time for Root's first bicycle kick of the year. You know, a Kendall McIntosh bike to win it.
Wow.
Send him forward. Just see what he does if he gets caught out.
It's a completely unserious predictions, guys, unlike what normally happens here. John, how are the Oakland Roots going to beat the Tampa Bay Rowdies?
Rowdies can put up some goals, so I'm going 3-2 Roots. Peter Wilson gets things going, gets his first goal. I will be excited to see a front line of Peter Wilson, Danny Trejo, Wolfgang Prentice, and Florian Vallot to put it all together. I think that can be a dangerous combination, and hopefully they can hit the ground running in Tampa Bay. It'll be a good test to see how they can do.
Okay, so you're thinking this is just going to be an offensive masterpiece, an attacking masterpiece from the
all-out offense. Rowdies can score.
All gas, no breaks. Get the ball.
Yeah, all gas, no breaks.
Very good.
I want to see Peter Wilson get things going. It's the time, you know.
All right. Peter?
Oh, we're not going to win.
Roots be beating the Tampa Bay Rowdies.
The dream is dead. We should probably sell and see if we can't get Andrew Luck in the offseason.
Is this better than saying 1-0 McIntosh? Because that's what I'm not sure if this was the better answer.
I prepped these remarks when you were being optimistic earlier and didn't have a chance to fit them in, so I'm using them now.
Okay.
No, I just don't think we probably beat Tampa on the road right now. Mm. I don't think the dream is dead, but I don't think we beat Tampa on the road.
Yeah, you're boring.
It's tough, right? We discussed this a lot in previous seasons. It's so difficult to win three time zones away in either direction. The Roots do not have a great track record in the Eastern time zone. Tampa Bay is... They look like they're back to their best this year. If the Roots are going to win, and they are, obviously, I think it does hinge a lot on the attacking talent. I think that the formula is that you pin Tampa Bay back just by forcing them to respect what the Roots have in their attack. I don't know that that necessarily means a lot of goals. I think this is a 2-1 game, and it's going to be a pretty tense one. But if you can keep that defense honest, you know, keep any defense honest, it really limits what you can do attacking wise. We know the Roots are going to be able to go toe to toe at the very least in the midfield. I think that having your attackers back is going to make the difference here, just like John. But I'm not seeing an all gas, no breaks outcome here. I think this is a much testier 2-1 outcome for the Oakland Roots. But we got plenty of, they got plenty of time to prepare for it. We've got plenty of time to prepare for it. We got a week off as fans. It's a nice little break. It's a little early in the season, honestly, but whatever. Take that break. The weather's supposed to be nice. Get outside, enjoy it, you know, and you know, you can really recharge those Roots fan batteries for a week from Saturday. Because the Roots will need us to send all of the good vibes we can mentally from the Bay to that other Bay in Florida.
I very rarely send good vibes to Tampa, Florida.
Yeah.
As, you know, on principle.
As a rule, of course. But we'll have to make an exception this time. Everybody enjoy the weekend. We'll be back after the Tampa Bay Rowdies match to talk about how incredible the Roots look with their extra week of preparation. And of course, until then, up the Roots.